This is Maggie Jones and Natural Wonders. Today, a story by John Muir. Climbing up into a tree in the Sierras of California and enjoying a wild storm from his lofty perch. Muir spent his formative years in Wisconsin, and he wrote extensively about Wisconsin, specifically in his book, The Story of My Boyhood and Youth. If you love his writing, check out my archive podcasts and listen to the pieces I've read about his time in Alaska, hiking and climbing and camping on the glaciers he loved so much. He wrote a hair-raising story about hiking a glacier with a brilliant, brave small dog named Stikine, and they both survived a perilous crossing, but barely. It's a great story. I also read parts of The Story of My Boyhood and Youth, which were published in the Passenger Pigeon, publication of the Wisconsin Society for Ornithology, all in the Archive Natural Wonders podcast on WDRT.org. This story is called A Windstorm in the Forests of the Yuba. This was published in Scribner's Monthly in 1878 and made a name for him at the time. From the website Library of America, LOA.org. About this story, they write, "The naturalist and author John Muir was born on April 21, 1838, in Dunbar, Scotland. One of Muir's most famous essays, a magazine piece that brought him to the attention of a wide readership, describes an evening along the Yuba River in the California mountains when an extraordinary storm hit the area, and he climbed to the very top of a 100-foot-tall Douglas fir to ride out the gale. Muir's life was filled with adventures of this sort, daring challenges he called scoochers. While still living in Scotland, his family immigrated to the United States when he was 11, and that's to Wisconsin. He and his younger brother David would provoke each other to increasingly challenging exploits, such as scaling the walls of Dunbar Castle, or even the roof of their own four-story home, which, quote, offered fine mountaineering exercise, unquote. One night he recalled in his memoir, The Story of My Boyhood and Youth, he opened his bedroom window, quote, in search of good scoochers, and hung myself out over the slates, holding on to the sill, while the wind was making a balloon of my nightgown. I then dared David to try the adventure, and he did. Then I went out again and hung by one hand, and David did the same. Then I hung by one finger, being careful not to slip, and he did that too," unquote. The challenges increased in danger until David got stuck at the top of the roof, quote, lost courage and began to cry that he couldn't get down, unquote. John had to drag him back in through the window by the heels to avoid discovery by their parents. And from the SierraClub.org website, from their vault, they have everything that John Muir has written, and then some. This is quite the website. The story. I'm going to skip the first paragraphs because it's quite long, just to fit it in one day. One of the most beautiful and exhilarating storms I ever enjoyed in the Sierra occurred in December 1874, when I happened to be exploring one of the tributary valleys of the Yuba River. The sky and the ground and the trees had been thoroughly rainwashed and were dry again. The day was intensely pure, one of those incomparable bits of California winter, warm and balmy and full of white sparkling sunshine, redolent of all the purest influences of the spring, and at the same time enlivened with one of the most bracing windstorms conceivable. Instead of camping out as I usually do, I then chanced to be stopping at the house of a friend. But when the storm began to sound, I lost no time in pushing out into the woods to enjoy it. For on such occasions, nature is always something rare to show us, and the danger to life and limb is hardly greater than one would experience crouching deprecatingly beneath a roof. It was still early morning when I found myself fairly adrift. Delicious sunshine came pouring over the hills, lighting the tops of the pines and setting free a steam of summery fragrance that contrasted strangely with the wild tones of the storm. The air was mottled with pine tassels and bright green plumes that went flashing past in the sunlight like birds pursued. But there was not the slightest dustiness, nothing less pure than leaves and ripe pollen and flecks of withered bracken and moss. I heard trees falling for hours at the rate of one every 2 to 3 minutes, some uprooted partly on account of the loose, water-soaked condition of the ground, others broken straight across, where some weakness caused by fire had determined the spot. The gestures of the various trees made a delightful study. Young sugar pines, light and feathery as squirrel tails, were bowing almost to the ground, while the grand old patriarchs, whose massive boles had been tried in 100 storms, waved solemnly above them, their long arching branches streaming fluently on the gale, and every needle thrilling and ringing and shedding off keen lances of light like a diamond. The Douglas spruces with long sprays drawn out in level tresses and needles massed in a gray shimmering glow presented a most striking appearance as they stood in bold relief along the hilltops. The madroños in the dells, with their red bark and large glossy leaves tilted every way, reflected the sunshine in throbbing spangles like those one so often sees on the rippled surface of a glacier lake. But the silver pines were now the most impressively beautiful of all. Colossal spires, 200 feet in height, waved like supple goldenrods, chanting and bowing low as if in worship, while the whole mass of their long, tremulous foliage was kindled into one continuous blaze of white sunfire. The force of the gale was such that the most steadfast monarch of them all rocked down to its roots with a motion plainly perceptible when one leaned against it. Nature was holding high festival, and every fiber of the most rigid giants thrilled with glad excitement. I drifted on through the midst of this passionate music and motion across many a glen from ridge to ridge, often halting in the lee of a rock for shelter or to gaze and listen. Even when the grand anthem had swelled to its highest pitch, I could distinctly hear the varying tones of individual trees, spruce and fir and pine and leafless oak, and even the infinitely gentle rustle of the withered grasses at my feet. Each was expressing itself in its own way, singing its own song, and making its own peculiar gestures, manifesting a richness of variety to be found in no other forest I have yet seen. The coniferous woods of Canada and the Carolinas and Florida are made up of trees that resemble one another about as nearly as blades of grass and grow close together in much the same way. Coniferous trees in general seldom possess individual character, such as is manifest among oaks and elms, but the California forests are made up of a greater number of distinct species than any other in the world. And in them we find not only a marked differentiation into special groups, but also a marked individuality in almost every tree, giving rise to storm effects indescribably glorious. Toward midday, after a long tingling scramble through copses of hazel and ceanothus, I gained the summit of the highest ridge in the neighborhood, and then it occurred to me it would be a fine thing to climb one of the trees to obtain a wider outlook and get my ear close to the aeolian music of its topmost needles. But under the circumstances, the choice of a tree was a serious matter. One whose instep was not very strong seemed in danger of being blown down or of being struck by others in case they should fall. Another was branchless to a considerable height above the ground, and at the same time too large to be grasped with arms and legs in climbing, while others were not favorably situated for clear views. After cautiously casting about, I made choice of the tallest of a group of Douglas spruces that were growing close together like a tuft of grass, no one of which seemed likely to fall unless all the rest fell with it. Though comparatively young, they were about 100 feet high, and their lithe, brushy tops were rocking and swirling in wild ecstasy. Being accustomed to climb trees and making botanical studies, I experienced no difficulty in reaching the top of this one, and never before did I enjoy so noble an exhilaration of motion. The slender tops fairly flapped and swished in the passionate torrent, bending and swirling backward and forward, round and round, tracing indescribable combinations of vertical and horizontal curves, while I clung with muscles firm braced, like a bobolink on a reed. In its widest sweeps, my treetop described an arc of from 20 to 30 degrees, but I felt sure of its elastic temper, having seen others of the same species, still more severely tried, bent almost to the ground, indeed, in heavy snows, without breaking a fiber. I was therefore safe and free to take the wind into my pulses and enjoy the excited forest from my superb outlook. The view from here must be extremely beautiful in any weather. Now my eye roved over the piney hills and dales as over fields of waving grain, and felt the light running in ripples and broad swelling undulations across the valleys from ridge to ridge, as the shining foliage was stirred by corresponding waves of air. Oftentimes these waves of reflected light would break up suddenly into a kind of beaten foam, and again, after chasing one another in regular order, they would seem to bend forward in concentric curves and disappear on some hillside like sea waves on a shelving shore. The quantity of light reflected from the bent needles was so great as to make whole groves appear as if covered with snow, while the black shadows beneath the trees greatly enhanced the effect of the silvery splendor. Excepting only the shadows, there was nothing somber in all this wild sea of pines. On the contrary, notwithstanding this was the winter season, the colors were remarkably beautiful. The shafts of the pine and libocedrus were brown and purple, and most of the foliage was well tinged with yellow. The laurel groves, with the pale undersides of their leaves turned upward, made masses of gray, and then there was many a dash of chocolate color from clumps of manzanita, and jet of vivid crimson from the bark of the madronos, while the ground on the hillsides, appearing here and there through openings between the groves, displayed masses of pale purple and brown. The sounds of the storm corresponded gloriously with this wild exuberance of light and motion, the profound bass of the naked branches and boles booming like waterfalls, the quick, tense vibrations of the pine needles now rising to a shrill, whistling hiss, now falling to a silky murmur, the rustling of laurel groves in the dells, and the keen metallic click of leaf on leaf. All this was heard in easy analysis when the attention was calmly bent. The varied gestures of the multitude were seen to fine advantage so that one could recognize the different species at a distance of several miles by this means alone, as well as by their forms and colors and the way they reflected the light. All seemed strong and comfortable, as if really enjoying the storm while responding to its most enthusiastic greetings. We hear much nowadays concerning the universal struggle for existence, but no struggle in the common meaning of the word was manifest here. No recognition of danger by any tree, no deprecation, but rather an invincible gladness as remote from exultation as from fear. I kept my lofty perch for hours, frequently closing my eyes to enjoy the music by itself, or to feast quietly on the delicious fragrance that was streaming past. The fragrance of the woods was less marked than that produced during warm rain, when so many balsamic buds and leaves are steeped like tea. But from the chafing of resiny branches against each other and the incessant attrition of myriads of needles, the gale was spiced to a very tonic degree, and besides the fragrance from these local sources, there were traces of scents brought from afar, for this wind came first from the sea, rubbing against its fresh briny waves, then distilled through the redwoods, threading rich ferny gulches, and spreading itself in broad undulating currents over many a flower-enameled ridge of the coast mountains, then across the golden plains, up the purple foothills, and into these piney woods with the varied incense gathered by the way. Winds are advertisements of all they touch, however much or little we may be able to read them, telling their wanderings even by their scents alone. Mariners detect the flowery perfume of land winds far at sea, and sea winds carry the fragrance of dulse and tangle far inland, where it is quickly recognized, though mingled with the scent of a thousand land flowers. As an illustration of this, I may tell here that I breathe sea air on the Firth of Forth in Scotland while a boy, then was taken to Wisconsin, where I remained 19 years, then without in all this time having breathed one breath of the sea, I walked quietly alone from the middle of the Mississippi Valley to the Gulf of Mexico on a botanical excursion, and while in Florida, far from the coast, my attention wholly bent on the splendid tropical vegetation about me, I suddenly recognized a sea breeze as it came sifting through the palmettos and blooming vine tangles, which at once awakened and set free a thousand dormant associations and made me a boy again in Scotland, as if all the intervening years had been annihilated. Most people like to look at mountain rivers and bear them in mind, but few care to look at the winds, though far more beautiful and sublime, and though they become at times about as visible as flowing water. When the north winds in winter are making upward sweeps over the curving summits of the High Sierra, the fact is sometimes published with flying snow banners a mile long. Those portions of the winds thus embodied can scarce be wholly invisible, even to the darkest imagination. And when we look around over an agitated forest, we may see something of the wind that stirs it by its effects upon the trees. Yonder it descends in a rush of water-like ripples and sweeps over the bending pines from hill to hill. Nearer we see detached plumes and leaves, now speeding by on level currents, now whirling in eddies or escaping over the edges of the whorls, soaring aloft on grand upswelling domes of air or tossing on flame-like crests. Smooth, deep currents, cascades, falls, and swirling eddies sing around every tree and leaf and over all the varied topography of the region with telling changes of form, like mountain rivers conforming to the features of their channels. After tracing the Sierra streams from their foundations to the plains, marking where they bloom white in falls, glide in crystal plumes, surge gray and foam-filled in boulder-choked gorges, and slip through the woods in long, tranquil reaches. After thus learning their language and forms in detail, we may at length hear them chanting all together in one grand anthem, and comprehend them all in clear inner vision, covering the range like lace. But even this spectacle is far less sublime and not a whit more substantial than what we may behold of these storm streams of air in the mountain woods. We all travel the Milky Way together, trees and men, but it never occurred to me until this storm day, while swinging in the wind, that trees are travelers in the ordinary sense. They make many journeys, not extensive ones, it is true, but our own little journeys, away and back again, are only little more than tree wavings, many of them not so much. When the storm began to abate, I dismounted and sauntered down through the calming woods. The storm tones died away, and turning toward the east, I beheld the countless hosts of the forest, hushed and tranquil, towering above one another on the slopes of the hills like a devout audience. The sun setting filled them with amber light and seemed to say, while they listened, "My peace I give unto you." As I gazed on the impressive scene, all the so-called ruin of the storm was forgotten, and never before did these noble woods appear so fresh, so joyous, so immortal. And that's the end of his essay, the essay of John Muir, A Wind Storm in the Forests of the Yuba. Enjoy John Muir all you can. This is Maggie Jones and Natural Wonders. Thank you for listening.